lay in bed for like a day if we're boys.
Yeah. Yep, that's not good. Okay. This must be number 6. Homework 6. So, the rest of you guys get your papers back?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Did the rest of you guys get your papers back? Okay. Okay, let's see here.
It's okay if it's a smaller assignment.
One problem would be enough to keep you busy, yeah? Okay, so let me think, I guess that's probably good enough. Let's see. Travis, I should ask you, I don't think you were there when we were in lab. Next year we're trying to figure out what to offer spring quarter in the way of electives. So there's like 6 choices. And your computer, right? I think pretty much all the choices except for VLSI were something that you'd have to take, 2 EE electives for. Like, say, for example, if you took analog design, you'd have to take electronics 2. And if you took communications, you'd have to take signals and systems. If you took digital control systems, you'd have to take feedback and control systems. But what we're trying to do is find out whether you would take any of those classes. And what are the classes? Oh, there's power electronics. You'd have to take electronics too. Is there a chance, or a good chance, you would want to take communications, digital control, power? What about VLSI?
VLSI sounds interesting. I just don't know enough about the schedule yet.
To know what you'd want to take.
There's a lot of credits, like half transfer from Southern. I don't know what I need to take when I go to Southern.
Right. Well, these are senior double electives, so probably there aren't anything that Southern would have had for you.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But still, your schedule, you don't know. Well, you might want to look at that here in the next day or so, and if there is a chance you want to take VLSI or perhaps one of the other ones, you know, let me know, and I'll stick your vote in for the one you want. Because otherwise, whoever else, that cared will decide the thing. And, just to make you feel better, there didn't seem to be a lot of computer engineers putting in votes at all. But Larry wanted me to double check. So today what we want to do is we want to look at some diode models. And models are needed because we've got to take the diode circuits that we're going to create and analyze them. And so diode models also enable you to kind of understand how to put together your own circuits. And so we'll do some models and some example, analysis of circuits. And, as you do this, the goal is trying to get to the place where you can take and dream up your own circuits. And also, another thing that you will find that is worthwhile here, and you'll need to be doing this the whole electronics class, is to put some of these classic circuits in your bag of tricks, okay? It's kind of like, for your computer engineers, it's like programming. There's certain classics, structures like loops and other kinds of things, classes and getters and setters and all these kind of things that you learn about that are very good things to understand and to have in your bag of tricks for two reasons. The first reason is, of course, when you're dreaming up your own circuits, you'll be able to use these things as building blocks for your own circuits, which is, one of the cool things you want to be able to do. But secondly, doing electronics, analog or digital electronics, but even more analog than digital in some ways, is very similar to to programming, the way programming is done nowadays. Often when you do programming these days in the real world, you'll be taking somebody else's code and you'll be trying to adapt it. Or first of all, you have to understand what it's doing. Then you have to adapt it to do something that, is slightly different from what it is doing right now. Okay? And in order to do that, it really helps when you're, reading the code, to recognize those structures and understand what's happening when you're reading the code. And likewise, when you unfold a big schematic with a lot of circuitry on it, you need to be able to look at that circuitry and recognize, oh, this is a blank. Like, for example, we have at least several things that you should be able to recognize now. There's op amp, inverting amplifier, non-inverting amplifier, comparator, integrator, summing inverting amplifier, right? You should recognize all those circuits. And recognizing them is important, okay? So, I could imagine, and I have in the past, have, an exam question where there's just a big schematic, right? You have to identify what the schematic does, what is all these subparts of the schematic, and things like that. Okay, so it's important to do that. So there's a bunch of diode circuits that we need to kind of learn as well. So we're going to do two things. One, we're going to look at the models, the circuit models that we can use to analyze these things, and then second, we'll look at some circuits that, you know, we can use these models on. But both the models are important and the circuits are important, okay? So the first model is, well, maybe the best way to explain it is to draw an IV characteristic. So this is VD, and this is ID, and, you know, here's the real I is a function of VD, and, you know, this is approximately the Shockley diode equation model, okay? I mean, it's basically, that's not exactly perfect, but it's pretty good, and, you know, you can think of this as that. The ideal model is this. Basically, it just goes like this. I don't know how to make it more stand out. I really need another color of pen. I should ask Renee next time, instead of two black pens, give me a blue one or something. But anyway, this right here is ideal. And what does this say? Well, this says if you try to make the voltage positive across the diode, it becomes a short, okay? If you try and, you know, make the current go, you know, if it's going in the direction of the arrow, I can draw the little schematic of the diode down here. If you try to make the voltage, you try to make the current go in this direction, then the voltage across the diode is zero. It acts like a short, okay? If you try and make the current go in that direction, the current is zero, okay? So it's like an ideal, if you think about it in plumbing terms, an ideal one-way valve, right? You know, you can think of, you know, you get your pipe here and there's a little flapper, you know. Try to make the water go this way, the flapper jams shut and no water gets through. Try to make the water go this way, you know, it's on a little hinge and it pops open, water goes through just fine. Okay? So this is an ideal diode, and let's do you know, an example of an ideal diode here. So the first example we can do, and this is like the simplest thing I could think of, this is called a half-wave rectifier. Oops. Okay, rectifier, half-wave. And so normally, you know, you use these on some kind of an alternating current. I'll put an AC signal in here. And, let's make a half-wave rectifier. So here's the AC voltage I'm going to put on there, and I just put one of these guys, diode here, and then I'll put my load resistor right here. So this is RL. And maybe this is Vm cosine of omega t. And so this is pretty easy. If I graph t here, I can kind of see what's happening. Maybe here's zero. It's going like this is the input. So this is Vs of t. Vs of t. And the output here, V out of T, in the ideal case, you know, this would be the ideal case, V out of T, and this is ideal diode. Oops. Right, ideal diode. Okay. The ideal diode, fat black line like that one, right? And so it's going to be fat, you know, I don't know, it's going to go down like this. I'm going to go across. You get the picture? Make sense to you? So it's like a short, you know, whenever the voltage here gets positive, the current would be going that direction to go through the load resistor, turns on the diode. And one thing you can kind of notice from this is, and you know, there's really two states here. It's kind of like a little bit of a state machine. You've got, you know, this state and that state, the on state and the off state. And what you can do to analyze this circuit is you can take a fat guess on what the state of the diode is, on or off, okay? So let's just suppose here we did the wrong thing here. Suppose I assumed it was off when I wanted to, you know, when this voltage is positive, right? So we're saying, so if that's off, then that means the current is coming this way, right? What I do is I replace this with an open circuit, okay, because I said it was off, right? I mean, I assumed it was off, so I placed it with an open circuit, and, you know, then I check and see whether the voltage across this open circuit was consistent with my assumption. And, you know, there's no current flowing through the RL here, right? So there's no IR drop here, so the minus side of the power supply is right here, right? And the plus side is there. And if this, you know, voltage was positive, as it is right here, right, my assumption would have been incorrect, right? In other words, the voltage would not be positive here and negative there, which would have made the thing, I mean, it would not have been positive here and negative there, which would have made the thing off. It's actually negative here and positive there, which would have made it on. So I guessed wrong, and so I replaced my guess with a new guess, which would have been a wire here. So if I put the wire in, okay, now I have to check with the wire. You don't check the voltage on the wire. You have to check the current if it's in the right direction, right? So if this is a wire, is the current going that way? And yes, sure it is, right? Does that make sense? So what you can do, this is a very simple case because there's only one diode here. But if you have a circuit with five or six diodes and some of them are on and some of them are off and they depend on one another kind of, then it can get kind of complicated, and you just kind of need to take your best guess. And, of course, you can see from this, it helps if you guess right first, right? Because if you guess right first and you analyze the thing and all the currents and voltages were the way you guessed they were, then everything is great, right? But if you guess wrong, then you have to go back and redo things. But usually when you guess wrong, you gain some insight to the circuit, okay? So it makes the next guess a little better than the first one. Okay, now we did this model. Now, if you look at this thing right here, this IV characteristic, the real one, and you look at it on the curve tracer, it would actually be a better guess if you kind of did like this. And this volts here would be about 0.7 volts for silicon, about 0.5 or 0.5 or 4 for germanium, and for a Schottky diode might be 0.3 or 0.2, okay? So you can get a variety of different diodes that kind of they go up steeper or less steep, you know, depending on that N fudge factor parameter, which had to do with the material, okay? And so... this is actually kind of more accurate over here in the positive region. And, you know, it also depends on how much current you have going through there. If it's not very much current, you might want to drop this 0.7 down to a 0.5 or something anyway, even though it's not a silicon diode, okay? But, you know, this is, you know, at some point it's going to be beyond that, and at some point it's before that, but this 0.7 volts is actually kind of, you know, it's about what it takes to turn on the diode. Right. And so that's the 0.7 volt model right here. And in reality, when I'm looking at a circuit, my first model to use is this ideal model. Okay? That's the one that I use to figure out how the circuit works. I just use that in my mind. And one of the things you'll discover in electronics is it's extremely important to use the model that is the simplest model, you know, not the most accurate. I said the simplest, okay? the simplest model that will give you the essential things that you want. Okay? If it's simple, then you can understand it, but it's got to include at least the essential elements of the thing. In other words, you know, maybe I come out with an even simpler model that would have said, you know, it's just always an open circuit or something here. I don't know. I mean, that'd been a pretty crummy model, but you know, if I use that on this rectifier, it wouldn't give me the essential elements of the rectifier, the idea that it, you know, only allowed the positive parts through, clipped off the negative parts. So you want to use the simplest model you can use that has the effects that you're worried about, okay? And so if I use this 0.7 volt model on this thing, it's going to look like this. Where this distance right here is what? Yeah, it's that distance there is 0.7, or, you know, this voltage is Vm minus 0.7, right?
Isn't it going to get closer to it as because it's exponential, so isn't it going to...
Yeah, well, I'm using, this is the 0.7 volt model circuit, so it's not quite there. This is the 0.7 volt model. And in real life, it's actually going to kind of go that, and then it's going to round the corners here, it's going to round the corners there, and round the corners there, okay? So it's kind of going to be more like 0.7 volts up here. As you can see, where you have high voltage, you're going to be drawing more current, right? In other words, if this voltage is large, the current is going to be large, because it's V over R is the current. And so as the current gets bigger over here, you know, you're going to be closer to the 0.7 volts, or, you know, actually might be a little more than 0.7 volts. Does that make sense? In reality, if you're using the real thing. So, you know, that's also a very good thing to be able to do, is to look at your result and say, well, you know, it's wrong right here and right here and right here. And I kind of have an idea about what it does there. Okay, so sometimes, when there's a lot of current, I will put this RD in here. RD is usually a pretty small resistor, okay? And so it wouldn't make much difference in this case unless RL was a very small resistor, okay? If RL is a very small resistor, then the resistance of the diode starts making a difference. So, you know, that's another little modification to this. And in that case, you know, the thing goes like this. This is the, I don't know, this would be the, this is the ideal diode, 0.7 volts, and then resistor RD, and this is, I'll put ideal here, so you'll know that that's an ideal diode, and this is 0.7 volts, and the slope right here, what's the slope? If there's no current going through here, I'm going to have 0.7 because I'm the no ID RD drop. So this is the ID, this is from the ID RD drop, but ID equals VD divided by RD. You know, the voltage across the diode minus the 0.7 volts. Here's the 0.7 volts. And so this is 1 over RD. Okay? That's the slope there, 1 over RD. So This is the, I don't know, put this thing here, 0.7, and then RD, kind of thing. And ideal, I suppose I could put an ideal diode in here. Okay, so all of these three right here, these are large signal models. And you'll know what I mean by that because pretty soon we're going to do a small signal model. Okay? So, let's do a small signal example here. Yeah, the amplitude of the signal. There's here, this guy right here might be, you know, like the AC power mains or something here, and we're turning that, you know, sinusoidal thing into something that always is positive. And they could use this in a power supply. If you put a capacitor across here, then that capacitor would kind of smooth out those bumpity bumps, you know, instead of being like that, it'd be that, and then a little down, and you know, and look more like DC, right? And you could run something that needed DC off that. Okay, so that's, you know, that's a very simple power supply. We could make a better one here if we made, instead of just going zero here, if we could make it so we could get a bump here too, which we could if we turned this upside down, right? Which, and there's ways of doing that. We could look at those. And then, you know, then you put a capacitor on there. You don't need quite as big a capacitor. And it'll give you this will give you a 60 hertz ripple if you look at it, the you know, the AC ripple on top. And the other one would give you a 120 hertz ripple because, you know, 60 hertz out of the wall. And if we make a bump twice, you know, for every sine wave, then we'll get twice the frequency out. But what I'd like to do for my example, I don't want to do one of those more complicated ones because they have more diodes in them and it makes it a little more hard to understand. Let's just look at the simplest thing I can think of here, which is for a small signal, which is an RF switch. And it's essentially that same circuit right there, okay? But I'm going to have a small signal. Now, this is a small signal right here. What I mean by that is it might be a few microvolts or a few, you know, millivolts, very small, okay? And this could be, for example, well, back in the 1960s and 70s, you know, when I was a young person, if you looked at a circuit for, say, an amateur radio receiver, inside that receiver there would be a band switch, and the band switch was actually a very expensive part of the receiver. It would have, there'd be a knob on the outside of the receiver, but that would go to a shaft inside the receiver, and the shaft would be very long, you know, about this long. And along that shaft would be a bunch of switch wafers, okay? And all those switch wafers were custom made so that when you click this switch over, it would switch the right things to change a bunch of LC circuits in the receiver to switch from one, you know, set of LC circuits that are switched for this band to another set for this band to another set for this band. And there was a whole bunch of LC circuits that would, you know, you'd have to switch. So there'd be several wafers on that one switch, and that would be an expensive device. Okay. It was all mechanical engineering, you know, very, very nice, you know, ceramic wafers, and they were expensive. Okay. So then in the 1970s, you know, semiconductors started to get cheaper. And so it became evident that you could make less expensive radios. You could get rid of that very expensive band switch by using diodes as switching elements, and you would use a DC current to turn on these diodes and turn them off. You know, and try to make a DC current going through this way would turn on the switch, right? And a DC current going back that way would turn it off, right? Or, you know, voltage trying to make it, you know, this positive and that negative would turn off the diode. And so this could act then like a switch that was controlled by the polarity of a DC voltage. And the DC voltage could be something that was switched in one place on the front of the thing, right? It would switch that DC voltage, and that DC voltage would go all over your circuit boards, and it would switch 10 switches at once, okay? 10 of these diodes at once. And that was much cheaper, okay? And it was also better in quite a lot of ways because those mechanical switches, when you would click them, you know, if you buy one of those radios from the 1960s now, collectors buy them and things, and one of the things you'll find that you need to fix are those switches. You know, they become corroded, and you have to, you know, get those contacts to working again. So, you know, they sell special chemical sprays that you can put on there and, you know, exercise the switch back and forth. And, you know, you have to be careful that you don't, you know, break it because, you know, it's only got so many cycles in it. You know? And so there's all these kind of things. Whereas these diode switches, you know, they don't have those mechanical breaking problems. Okay. So they're also more reliable. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to take and make a model for one of those kind of a switches, and let's just do an analysis of that. And you see, the thing is, if this DC voltage is going to turn on the diode, I'll put my diode switch here. And, you know, here's the load, maybe. And, you know, the way I've drawn it here, the load is going to get the same current through it the load is going to have a DC component to the output too, and so on. You could do it so it didn't have that problem, but I want to make this thing as just as simple as I can, and besides, it illustrates very nicely how to do this small signal analysis that we need to be able to do. And this small signal analysis is extremely important because we use it over and over again, not just on diodes, but we'll use it on transistors, and every kind of transistor we do, every kind of component, we're going to do this kind of thing. And I don't know if you noticed on LTSpice when you were playing with that, but, you know, there was the transient analysis that probably is what you might have used. But there's also a small signal analysis, small signal AC analysis, and that's essentially what we're talking about right here. SPICE does the same thing, right? So even, you know, those kind of things. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call this VDC and this little V, little AC, okay? Now, the little sub-little has a real significance, and large sub-large, this is capital sub-capital, okay? And we use this notation so that you can understand what kind of signal we're talking about. So over here, there's going to be a voltage. Well, let me do the voltage across the diode because that's really what's more interesting. There's going to be a voltage VD here and a current ID. And VD will be made up of two parts, roughly, okay? It's going to be the DC part and the AC part, right? So it's going to be capital V sub capital D plus little v sub little d. And this is the large signal. Part, and this is what we call the small signal part. And likewise, the current in the diode will be made up of two parts, capital I sub capital D plus little I sub little d. And likewise, that's the small signal current, and this is the large signal current. Okay? Does that make sense? And really, ID equals this I0 times e to the q VD over NKT minus 1. You know, or some, you know, that's the Shockley diode approximation, so that we'll say that's the real thing. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to figure out what these four quantities are. Now, I should mention that, you know, we're kind of using the idea of superposition to say there's these two things here, right? And with a nonlinear kind of a circuit, that isn't necessarily always true. So really, this is kind of an approximation here, but it is a pretty good approximation. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to try and figure out what is this part and that part. I mean, I've got the whole thing over there. How do I split this thing into these two? Does that make sense? What the problem is? We're trying to do that. So let me draw a picture here. It looks to me like, you know, I'm going to assume that this VDC is positive here to start out. Well, I don't know. I guess we'll draw everything. But I'm kind of going to assume at least first analysis that I have that is positive. So here's the ID, here's VD. Actually, that goes down here. This is zero right here. And you know, this kind of goes like this. Like that. And that's this equation right here I'm trying to draw. Now, what's going to happen is there's going to be some... It's going to be some point right here. This is going to be capital V sub capital D, and right over here will be the capital I sub capital D. So you can kind of, you know, look at that. You know, I kind of got something like that. And then if you think about it, you could make these little axes right here. These little axes, this would be the little V sub little D axis, and that would be the little I sub little D axis, right? And what we're going to have is this capital, subcapital, that's DC, so it just stays there, right? But the little thing is a little AC, so it's going to be, you know, the voltage, little AC voltage going back and forth like this, and the little AC current's going back and forth like this, and as one goes, you know, as the voltage goes down, the current goes down following this line right here, right? Does that make sense? And so... You know, really, I mean, it's kind of going along this line right here. But, you know, I need to make what's known as a linear approximation to that thing right there. That would be a line right there. And I would call the slope of this line, it's going to be 1 over little r sub little d. I mean, I'd kind of like to say that this little I sub little d equals 1 over r sub d times the little v sub little d. Then I could, you know, use my circuit analysis kind of thing. Well, you know, I could do this. So if I took this guy right here and rewrote him using Taylor series, I could say this would be ID evaluated at capital V sub capital D. That's my expansion point in the Taylor series, the X0. Do you remember, Taylor series, you know, F of X equals F at X0 plus f prime at x0 times delta x plus did kind of things, right? You remember that? And this was over, you know, 1 factorial, the next one was over 2 factorial and all that. You remember that stuff from calculus? Well, what I want to do is I want to use the first two terms of the Taylor series, and I will say, instead, I will say approximately. So ID, okay, is approximately. ID evaluated at VD, that's this F at X0 right here. Does that make sense? Okay. Plus the derivative, so that would be the partial of ID with respect to VD evaluated at little v sub little d equals big V sub big D, right? That's the F at X, F prime at X0. Then I have to multiply the F prime by delta X, and delta X would be VD minus, let's see, X, delta X is X minus X0, right? Right, so this is X, and then X0 is VD, right? Okay. And X minus X0, or this delta X, so what is that? VD minus capital V sub capital D. little v, little v, right? If I take this guy minus that guy, I get that guy, right?
Yeah, we could have just written that down, right? But just wanted you to kind of fit this in all ways possible. And this guy right here is a kind of a constant right here, right? I mean, once I take the derivative right here of that thing, and I plug in capital V sub capital D, I've got a number, right? Right? And so this thing must be my 1 over RD, right? Yeah. Or if you wanted to call it 1 over R, you could call it GD if you wanted to for the conductance of the diode, right? So I've got this thing right here, and this dude right here must be just that dude right there, right? This guy's a constant. I mean, ID evaluated at VD, this curve right here evaluated where the little v sub big D is equal to big V sub big D. That's right there, which gives me big I sub big D, right? So that's this term. That's the large signal part. And then this is the small signal part right here, which I got what I wanted. It's little V sub little D over RD, right? So I could say, down here for the small signal, if I say little I sub little D equals little V sub little D over little R sub little D, right? Oh, that's like circuits. I like that, right? And we kind of made this thing right here act like we could use superposition on it, right? We could do this thing in two parts. First of all, I'll turn off the little v sub AC because, you see, it's so small, it's not going to make any difference on where this point is right here, right? And even if it did, I'd still want that point to be just about where this was turned off, right? So I turn that guy off, and I'll find this capital V sub capital D and capital I sub capital D there, right, with the load line analysis, right? You know, make my thing from my RL, right? You know, we did that last day, right, the load line analysis. It came down like this, and it would go right through that point, right? So then I get the capital I sub capital D and the capital V sub capital D. Then I do this derivative. I know we can do that derivative, right? That's not too hard. I mean, maybe we should do that derivative. So what is this partial? Partial of ID with respect to VD is equal to. Well, it just looks like I have to, it's going to be I0 times Q over NKT times. I'm taking a derivative, right? It's not integral. You guys are making things too hard here. Yeah. Okay, so we got that. And that's approximately, you see, if we were over here in the positive region, we could ignore this 1 here because it's so small compared to that term. And so this is approximately Q over NKT times capital I sub capital D, really. If I want to put this as little d, big V sub big D, this guy then would go to big V sub big D, right? And then this guy right here, I0 times e to the q big V sub big D over NKT is approximately this if big V sub big D is greater than 0. Okay.
That's because it's so small.
Because this term is very small compared to that term for positive things. It starts climbing up, you know, this distance right here compared to how big that is. Oh, it's nothing, right? So.
That's where the E goes away.
Well, the E, what I'm saying is, if this V right here, if this is true, then ID is approximately I0 times E to the QVD over NKT. In other words, I can ignore this minus 1 if big V sub big D is bigger than 0, if it's positive. See, if I'm over here, this little tiny
amount there compared to how big that is, so almost nothing, ignore that, right? And so this is approximately this. And if not, you can do, you know, write that. That's exactly what it is, right? It's just kind of handy to have that, because then if you have, this one works very nicely if you have capital V sub capital D, but this one works very nicely if you have capital I sub capital D, right? So, in some cases, one is easier than the other. So you can kind of see here, you can see what happens. You know, I could write the load line analysis here. You know, it would kind of go up like this. This would be, the slope right here would be, what is this? This is going to be minus 1 over RL. Right there is the slope, and this guy right up here would be, that would be, first of all, basically the way I'm getting this is I turn this guy off, have this guy right here, write a Thevenin equivalent right here, right? So this y-intercept would be VD over RL right there. And if I make this go out a little bit further here, VD axis there, and just follow this down, this x-intercept would be capital VD, capital VDC. This would be capital VDC right here over RL. That would be capital VDC right there. Okay, so we could actually do some analysis here, some design. We could say, look at, you know, if I knew my RL was 50 ohms, and I wanted this switch to have, you know, say a dB of insertion loss. Okay, I couldn't have more than a decibel of insertion loss. Then that would basically specify what the little RD had to be here, right? Because you'd have a, you know, if you look at the small signal model, it would look like this. You know, the small signal model, once you get done, well, this will be little VAC here. You've got the little RD here. And then you've got the RL here. And the current going down around here is little I sub little D, right? And if you knew that this output voltage, you know, on this RL, the output voltage had to be 1 dB down from VAC, right? Then you could figure out what RL had to be to make that voltage divider give you that 1 dB down, right? And just using circuit analysis, that tells you what RL has to be. Then you plug it in back here, right? You know what the what RD has to be. Then you plug it in here. This is, you know, this is 1 over RD, right? This is 1 over RD. So once you know what RD is, then you know, and then you find the capital I sub capital D you need, right? Once you know you got the capital I sub capital D, you know this point right here, right? And you can then plug it back into this equation and get capital V sub capital D right there, right? So now you know the VD and the ID, right? And you know the RL, so you know the slope of this guy right here. Right? So that will help you pick this last thing, VDC here. It's got to be so big, right? And with that specific VDC, that's the control voltage. You need to put that much DC voltage across there to get 1 dB of insertion loss. Likewise, if you want to make the switch has another spec, not just insertion loss, that would be how much dB you lost when the switch was down, right? But when the switch is open, you'd like to have it a lot of isolation in that case. So there's an isolation spec, and you could say, look at, when the switch is open, that's, I'm going to put some negative DC voltage on here, right? I want 60 dB of isolation. In other words, the voltage here is going to be 60 dB down from that voltage right there, right? And that's going to make a little R sub little D really big, right? So that's going to be right back down here. RD will be, since this slope here is approximately zero, right? That makes RD, this one over the slope is 1 over RD, so here 1 over 0 gives a really big RD, right? And it'll help you pick the same way what the VD and the ID, you know, to tell you what the VD and ID has to be. In this case, you can't use this approximation. You have to use this one right here, right? So you get the, you know, plug that in back there and find out what VD and what ID you need. Use that equation in this equation to find the VD and ID you need here. And then there'll be that same slope. It'll be, I mean, this line will just move down here, right? And the x-intercept here will be the VDC just like it was there, right? But now you've got instead an open switch, right? So there'll be two values for VDC. You'll put, you know, the positive one over here when you want to turn it on, and that negative one over here when you want to turn it off. So you just change the polarity, and now you have a little switch that switches your small signal RF, you know, that's coming in from the antenna or, you know, some amplifier stage is still small compared to, you know, whatever this voltage might be, 12 volts or something, right? Does that make sense?
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Well, this the same procedure that we just did here, we'll do that for every single device we talk about, and it's the same thing. So you need to get, you know, this Taylor series idea in mind. You need to get this picture in mind. And it is what you do, not just in electronics, but in, you know, all kinds of situations where you have a nonlinear curve, and you want to use linear, you know, ideas, superposition and proportionality. And so you find the operating point. This is known as the operating point right here. You find this operating point, and then you have a small perturbation around that, okay? And they do the same thing in quantum mechanics. They do the same thing, you know. It's all the same kind of a thing, you know. So it's called perturbation theory in quantum mechanics or in physics or whatever. And, you know, but for us, we call it small signal analysis. And we use this IEEE notation. This is IEEE notation here. And, you know, actually, you can kind of thank the guys who came up with transistors. Back in the old days when they did this same kind of stuff with tubes, there is a thing called the diode tube, okay? And it has a similar kind of an IV characteristic as this thing. But in the old tube days, you know, whoever was driving it was thinking more about the problem he was working on than his notation, okay? And the notation was horrible. And so back in the tube days, people used to have notation that had, you know, things like this DC was called the B+. And, you know, things like that. But now we have this nice IEEE notation, you know, by the time transistors came around, you know, said, people said, well, look, let's do this the right way this time. Let's make some kind of notation that's standard. We're going to use this. And when people look at this, they can understand. Big sub big means the DC. Little sub little means a small AC wiggle. Okay? And then there's also one more that we haven't talked about here. That would be big sub little. And what do you think big sub little is?
Wait, the large AC.
Well, no, big sub little is the Laplace or phasor transform of little sub little. Did you ever notice in LNA when you take the Laplace transform of little v of t, you get big v of s? Well, that's what that's all about. So big sub little is that, and I don't know if they have little sub big. Oh, little sub big is the total thing. We did that, right? So little sub big. So we got big sub big. What was there? Is there another combination? Little sub little. Yeah, I guess that's it, right? Okay, so we did everything, right? Yeah, right. So little sub big is the total. This is the total. This is everything. All the total. And then we have the large signal and the small signal, okay? And I should say, I'll put big sub little of S equals Laplace transform of little sub little of T. Okay, or phasor, you know, transform if you like phasors.
in which case it'd probably be big sub little with a bar on top. Okay. Well, have a good day. Wash your hands many times today because there are people that are sick all over the place. Talk to Travis. You don't want to get it. Okay?
Travis, were you out smooching last week?
He wishes. Probably all he did was sat down at a computer keyboard in the computer lab.
Those things are disgusting.
Yeah, or he punched his key code into one of those doors. That's all it takes, guys.
And then he licked his fingers.
Oh, yeah, or whatever, you know. I mean, it's so easy. He rubbed his eye. That's all that happened.
I have a question.